You have a reality where 9 of 10 households, according to the World Food Program in North Gaza, have been without food for a whole day and a whole night. Imagine families that have to spend hours or more a day just to be able to get a couple of pieces of bread to feed their family. We're seeing hundreds of bodies pile up a day in airstrikes. We risk seeing that or more in the days ahead if there isn't urgent action by world leaders to end these atrocities.
Omar Shakir of Human Rights Watch, we thank you so much for being with us. And we wrap by saying, happy birthday to Renee Feltz.
As a pedestrian, you see headlights, but that doesn't mean the driver sees you. When walking at dawn, dusk, or after dark, make sure to be seen by oncoming traffic. Walk facing traffic. Wear light-colored, light-reflective clothing. Carry a bright light so drivers can see you. Use crosswalks. See and be seen. Pedestrian safety. It's no accident.
Well said. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, and you're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. Surprised? Yeah, it's us. 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and WUSB.FM. It's time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
You get through the stormy weather okay?
I stayed dry, yeah, for the most part.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was something. That was something. You know, having that happen 2 weeks in a row. last Sunday, as you recall, we were at the Jets game, and there were all these dire warnings of horrible weather coming. And then this Sunday, the same thing.
It really felt like a prequel to something more fierce, because it had different effects in different places. It really depended on your experience. There was definitely higher water levels in so many places.
You noticed that, huh?
Yeah. Some places you ordinarily would drive, you understand there might be some uneven surfaces.
Well, I almost drove through a lake yesterday.
When that's covered, yeah. Wow. Especially at
night.
I said,
you know what?
It's
not doing this because, you know, the pressure from the cars behind me was keep going.
No, you made the right call.
No, I don't think so, because I don't know where the bottom of this thing is. And I recently learned that if you drive into a big pool of water, you destroy your car. I thought it just got wet and then he dried it off. No, you destroy. We learned that in some of the big storms of the past few years. Not personally, fortunately, but no, I'll just make a U-turn. I'll leave others to experiment with having their car turn into a boat.
Yeah, you don't want it to go up above where the doors are, and it just wreaks havoc on everything. And you're best to play it cautious. It's been inclement. There are crews out. People haven't really assessed the damage yet. At least, you know, in half a day ago or early on, once the brunt of it left. But I can't help but feel like aggravated. I'm sorry. I wish it was snow, because I feel like all this moisture, all of this effect would have been a first layer of snow. And I know people, I mean, I would be giving the exact like cautions and tips for inclement weather, but for snow. But it would be so much fun if there was that level, because it seems like we get cold, then we get moisture, then we get cold. It's everything that won't actually create those conditions.
When it's cold, it's dry, and then when precipitation comes in, look at that. The temperature shoots up and it turns into rain. Yeah, if that had been snow, oh my goodness, all the rain we got, it would be feet of snow.
I am sorry to sound so exasperated and just I don't know. I don't want to be
like
talking.
Me.
I don't want to be talking about flooding in December.
You sound
know?
Like me. You sound exasperated at not having snow.
No, because this was it. This was like, come on.
Well, it's not winter so yet. I'm not upset yet because it's technically not winter. All right. So legally, you know, nature is fine here.
But it's very cold now.
Well, it's not like, even below freezing.
But close to that range.
See, to me, very cold. Very cold is minus double digits in Celsius, which is, you know, like in the teens. Fahrenheit, that's very cold. I look forward to that in winter. That's, you know, don't use the word winter if you don't want winter, all right? If you're in a place that doesn't have winter, just say, yeah, we have a long summer and then autumn goes into spring. Say that. But
it just makes the clothing you have to wear so...
We have to fight in the courts.
Are you going
to
wear a coat? Are you going
to
wear a shirt?
This is the thing, Kyle. We have to fight this in the courts, because if people continue to misuse the word winter, then we become used to winters that don't have snow. You see, because just because it's December doesn't mean winter. If it's in the 50s or 60s, you know, you people in Florida, no, you don't get winter. You don't get that. You get sunshine, you get beaches. Yeah, have all that, but you don't get winter. I'm sorry.
You're going to de-season them.
I'm not sure who I'm mad at exactly, but I'm definitely mad at somebody. And I'm going to pursue this. Just this, let this be my notice that I will be pursuing this. We should go somewhere. We should go somewhere for winter where it's winter. Like I said, I'm owed a winter from last year. And okay, if we get a winter here this year, fine. But there's no way we're going to get two winters here this year. So I have to, you know, go on the road to get my winter.
Yeah, you have to seek your winter out.
Suggestions welcome. otw@2600.com. Where should we go for a winter expedition? And keep in mind, we've been to Yukon, so we're not afraid. You know, I've been to Iqaluit in Nunavut. Well, it wasn't called Nunavut when I went there. It was called Northwest Territories. And Iqaluit was called Frobisher Bay. But irregardless, I went there. And, of course, I went there in April, but they had a blizzard. They had a blizzard in my honor when I went there in April. So that's the kind of place it is. So anyway, we'll get our justice. We will. And let's, you know what? Let's save the planet, too. Can we do that? Not enough time? Okay. Well, yeah, we'll talk about that some other time.
It would be wonderful if that could be a priority, and instead of the sham it appears to be.
Tell the people at that stupid cop conference. My God, I might as well have called it that. They wouldn't even include language, basically saying that it's a good idea, encouraging people to or countries to phase out fossil fuels, you know, while having it in a country that is known for fossil fuels, one of the biggest producers. It wasn't until the outrage of people like us that they actually went back and rewrote it to include just that. So it shows, you know, if you show your outrage, if you make it go viral, they have to respond. They have to do something.
Yeah, and a lot of those countries are diversifying their economies and trying to get away from just being exporters of petrochemicals, and that is a recognition, I think, of the times, and that this is a global priority. People have to really think about future energy and not just what we're doing or what we have done, and making all of these concessions for that, as though it hasn't been propped up and entrenched industry for quite some time that hasn't really reckoned with the responsibility it has regarding the impact, and the profit seeking just made it worse. So like people really like they don't have time to be like cleaning up other people's decisions and things, leadership failings, right? It's there's no time for any of that either. So you really can't be lying to, or like trying to lie to yourself and not be surprised at like critiques of it.
I just got an alert on my phone of a state of emergency. For some reason, from News 12, they seem to think I'm in New Jersey. Why do they think that? This is News 12, New Jersey. It's not even relevant to here. But state of emergency update, an update on the state of emergency issued in the city of Paterson, which is in New Jersey. And it's just that. That's all that is. Do I have to click on things? Okay, Paterson is a state of emergency. Do nothing, mayor. Okay, you know what? I'm reading somebody's opinion instead of a news story. That is what's being pushed at me right now. I have no idea what they're talking about. This is what's wrong today. You get alerts that don't apply, that get overshadowed by idiots that are commenting on the alerts. I'm going to click on something.
Sounds like a person and not a place.
No, it's the city of Paterson.
Oh, it is.
Oh, it's for the flooding, for the flooding from the storm. And this is from yesterday afternoon.
So you're getting
why am I just getting alert now for a state I don't live in for something that already happened? And why am I seeing somebody's comments on it before I see the actual story? You know what? Throw this phone away. It's useless. Absolutely useless. I'm sorry.
But we pride ourselves in filling in the gaps, and we do not want an alert to slip.
I didn't get any alerts for the storm.
And that is the kind of thorough coverage you can expect at WUSB.
Well, yeah, we'll get it right. We'll tell you what's going on because we're actually here. You know, we can tell you because we're live. It's dark outside. The moon. Look at the moon. Yeah, it's just it's a little more than a half moon. Yeah. See, that proves we're real. Okay, hey, today, New York, or Governor Kathy Hochul signed a bill that empowers a commission to study not only the history of slavery, which is a great lesson for all these newly elected representatives, which was outlawed in New York back in 1827, but also studying the subsequent effects on housing discrimination, bias policing, income inequality, and mass incarceration of African Americans. New York now joins California and Illinois at the forefront of reparations efforts, which is a complicated endeavor that will immerse stakeholders in a contentious political and budgetary conversation about the past and its dictates for the future. You think it'll be contentious? You think white people are going to just accept this and do the right thing? Hard to say. Far too early, according to this New York Times story, to tell what type of restitution, cash or otherwise, the commission in New York will recommend for descendants of enslaved people, or even if it will make such a recommendation. In California, a multi-billion dollar price tag has already threatened to stymie the reparations project, highlighting the distance between the state's goals and its fiscal reality. In California, let's see, the commission approved a report in May that recommended a sweeping statewide reparations program as well as a formal apology to the state's millions of black residents. The payments, which could reach more than $1.2 million per person, would cost billions of dollars at a time when the state faces fiscal challenges, including a $68 billion revenue shortfall. $1.2 million per person? Yeah, it's going to cost billions, absolutely. I'm surprised it doesn't cost more than that. But you have to ask, what is the right thing to do? And certainly, when people do wrong to other people, there has to be a price. What is the price that the people who enslaved other people in the past ever paid? What is that price? Just that they couldn't do it anymore? You know, there has to be something. And I guess that's what we'll be working on in New York now, figuring that out. The bill signing today drew an assortment of the state's many black political leaders, including the bill's sponsors in the state Senate and Assembly. And now that the bill has been signed, Ms. Hochul and the leaders of the Senate and Assembly will each appoint three members to the task force. So expect to hear a lot of complaining from white people in the days, weeks, months ahead. But also ask yourself, you know, as Kathy Hochul said today, acknowledging the political risks of jumping into a conversation about historical wrongs, she concluded truly standing against racism would mean more than giving people a simple apology 150 years later. I think we can all agree that's not enough. So what is enough? What would make this, right's not the right word, but what would make us move forward?
Well, I'm so like thrilled to hear that it's not like, it's not a question of like, should we do this? It's how, and figuring all of that out being the primary goal is a great, like a great world to be living in a positive step, something fantastic to look forward to. So I like that we're going to be doing that. And
studying doing that.
Well, studying, but like, and actually moving on it, like establishing what it will take to define that and then make it happen. I think it has a lot to do with if it is financial, definitely like creating deep generational wealth and stability. But I don't know. I don't know if it's not for me to decide. It's like that's on people that are benefactors of it, you know?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. One thing though, had this been done 150 years ago, would it be a lot easier today, wouldn't it? So doing it today will make it a lot easier than waiting another 50 years, right?
Oh, fully, fully.
Can we agree that we should have done something back then, we being the American people, the American government should have done something when this issue supposedly was again, resolved is not the right word, but addressed, or when change began.
Acknowledged.
Yeah, barely.
Officially, right?
So much to, and you know, you have to learn from your history or you're going to repeat it.
Well,
and
of course, even in the trying, like there will be failures. That's how we learn like how to approach these things in reconciliation and there will be attempts like this that are badly done and we're going to have to suffer that as well. But that's an interesting, development.
Yeah, and no doubt this will be framed as something that Democrats are doing that is crazy and unrealistic and woke and all that. Look, there's nothing woke about acknowledging slavery and doing something to counter it. That's just basic humanity. So if that's something you consider unacceptable, well, I don't know what to call you, but this is not something you can just hide from. Okay. You know, I want to look at this story here from Yahoo News, actually, of all places, entitled "Young Voters Explain Why They're Bailing on Biden and Whether They'd Come Back." And, you know, I printed it out, and the first thing it says under that headline is, "Oops, something went wrong. Please try again later." I have no idea what it's talking about.
Because that sums it up.
It does sum it up. I don't know if that's part of the story. It's a big exclamation point, too. But the whole story got printed, so I don't know what went wrong and what I'm supposed to try later. But let me just start by reading the first paragraph. I'm going to say some things that might be hurtful to some people. And I'm going to read people's names because the names are in the damn stories. So I'm sorry you gave your name. But Jaden Camarena in Northern California is contemplating blowing off the 2024 presidential election. Jaden Camarena is an idiot. Okay, I am going to add sentences. I said I was going to say things. I'm sorry. I believe Jaden is a fool for even a moment contemplating blowing off the election. The hell is wrong with you? You think it's not important? You think that not voting is going to get any change? I mean, just think for a second. Yeah, I know you got to lead off this big news story, but please, for God's sake. All right. Evan McKenzie in Battleground, Wisconsin, is looking for any other candidate than the current front runners. Well, Evan, I hear you. You know, I sympathize, but you're looking too late. It's 11 months to the election. I mean, are you familiar with how elections are run in this country? They start as soon as the last one ends. You know, the time to pick a different candidate than Biden was 2 or 3 years ago. Not now. There's not enough time. All right, it's not ideal. I don't like that system. I wish it were different, but that is the system. And you can't just wish that away. So, Evan, don't be like Jaden. Don't be an idiot. All right. And also in Philadelphia, Prue Carmichael. Cool first name, Prue. As in the Prue building in Boston. Prue Carmichael isn't even convinced this race matters. Well, Prue, you might be the biggest fool of all. Because, of course, this race matters. You have somebody, basically, who is promising to be a dictator. And who we know can be a dictator. Versus somebody who you might disagree with on some things, but who has shown nothing but competence in the job and has gotten things done. Look at the infrastructure bill. Look at all the improvements that are going on. And yeah, I know people want to complain about the economy, but the economy isn't doing badly. You might not be doing as well as you want to be doing, but that just shows the disconnect between economic news and individual prosperity. It never, never works exactly the same way. Anyway, these three young voters live in different cities. They work different jobs. They have varying political beliefs. But among the things they have in common, they voted for Joe Biden in 2020. And now they say that the president cannot count on their support in 2024. McKenzie said, "I genuinely could not live with myself if I voted for someone who made the decisions that Biden has." McKenzie is a 23-year-old working at Starbucks and is a union organizer in Madison, Wisconsin. "I didn't even feel great about voting for Biden in 2020, he said. "Well, you know, I can see that. I can see not feeling great about picking the only candidate that existed against Trump. But you have to make a decision. And sometimes it's lesser of the two evils." Although, you know, I hesitate to call Biden an evil. There are some things I disagree with him on passionately. But there are other things that I agree with, and I'm happy that somebody was in power that could see these accomplishments. Anyway, let's continue. The feeling helps illustrate why Biden's ratings and support among young voters have dipped noticeably in recent polling. In November, NBC News' latest national polls showed Biden locked in close competition with Trump for voters aged 18 to 34, which is a sharp drop from the margins Biden enjoyed over Trump in the 2020 election. We've been seeing this in our data and focus groups actually since May, said a senior researcher at the Democratic polling firm Hit Strategies. And to me, it's because the 2024 campaign season for Democrats hasn't started yet. And I think we should remember that. Yeah, this is December of the year before the election. So these polls really, they don't count for much. But they do show some viewpoints that need to be addressed. And that's why we're talking about this. So, you know, I'm going to do a couple of quotes here. Back to Jaden Camarena. It's so complicated because it almost feels like if I were to give my vote for Biden, I will be showing the Democratic Party that what they are putting out is enough, which is the bare minimum, in my opinion. Okay, you know, but if you vote for somebody else or don't vote at all, the message that you're sending is that Trump is what we need. Might not be the message you think you're sending, but numbers count. And when you add up the numbers, of course, in our crazy election system, it's not a popular account that matters. It's the electoral count. But however we get there, if your vote isn't counted as in favor of something other than Trump, it's basically a vote for him. And that's just unacceptable. I just cannot understand people who are willing to give it up because they disagree, because something happened that disappointed them. Am I alone in this, Kyle? I mean, you're a lot closer to this demographic than I am.
Well, I think that it has to... There are platform issues, and then there's this sort of binary that we know it's going to be broken down into. You can follow along very closely or look at the like longer term forecasts, but we kind of know what this is going to be. And I think maybe voters that haven't had as much experience giving it a try, getting their candidate in, mm-hmm. they don't really have the sense of the long game in so few words. I don't know.
Well, okay, so McKenzie goes on to say, I want to show the Democratic Party as a young person that you still need to earn our vote, and if you don't, the consequences will be your career. No. No, 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 no. Look, these people will always be able to make a living doing something. The consequences will be our country, all right? If you think that you're sending a message to a candidate that you don't approve of something they did or something they said or something they didn't do or say, you're wrong. They're not going to hear that. But we're all going to feel what happens as a result of the other side winning. And McKenzie goes on to say, a Republican getting elected isn't the end. It is the beginning of a much larger fight. Well, you know what? That fight, that much larger fight, is something I don't think you'll be able to handle. Because it basically is a fight for everything, freedom, speech, you know, just democracy itself. Don't listen to me. Read what people are saying. Listen to what people are saying. The people who are running. Listen to the platforms. Look at what happened the last time we went through this merry-go-round. All right, we have lost so much just because of those 4 years. Roe versus Wade, gone.
Yeah, those are fall-on effects that are sort of the lasting impacts of past voter votes cast. You mm-hmm. have to think of it as ripples or like echoes of past political choices that have dictated the present moment. So certain things, a lot of the process, as is said often, is slow. So you have to sort of understand and be willing to accept that, like, in the end, and there's also this moment in the current election, it's just weird. Mm-hmm. Where, but and so applying the, like the typical thing you would even in a mid or like off election, as is it is called, it doesn't really apply. Like you can talk about all day about platforms, although there are exceptions, certain things that have been lost, like the abortion issue, that are really full of energy right now. But those things apply to you in that instance. But when we get to what the administrations are and what this choice is and the binary, I was calling it, mm-hmm. you really have to think about who is around the candidate. And I trust personally, yes. and maybe that's something that some of these younger voters should just at least look at, is who has been put in place by this candidate, and who of those administrations do you feel is actually responsive when you air what they're not doing? In other words, yeah. if something happens in Trump's situation and you're mad about his administration's choices, do you feel heard? Do you feel like they will be responsive, or does that, and is it the same case for the current administration or for who Biden has put in place? And I think those are the kinds of ways that are helpful in thinking about these fall-on effects and what you're voting for actually puts in place.
You know, I think you nailed it, because it's the people that candidates and elected officials surround themselves with that really matter. And, you know, it doesn't matter if Biden actually walks into what I consider to be a false narrative about his competency, where the right wing, Fox News, are making fun of his ability to say words succinctly or move around. You know, even if he turns into Captain Pike, you know, from the original Star Trek, where he's just beeping with lights and things, as long as he's beeping the right lights and doing the right things, that's all that matters. And as far as I can see, he has done just that. And at least, you know, even in the cases where I strongly disagree with him, he's making a decision and he's backing it up with his logic, which I don't always agree with, but there's no way I can agree with everybody on everything. So you have to ask yourself, which actually is more sane? All right. You know what? We have someone else here. Okay. This is from Austin Kapp, a 25-year-old living in Castle Rock, Colorado, and new king of the idiots. I'm sorry. I don't like calling people idiots. I really don't. I it's distasteful to me, but look, you put your name in the paper and you said something idiotic. So what am I supposed to do? He says, I mean, he made a lot of really big promises in his campaign, and virtually none of them were followed through on. Yeah, Austin, you hear about this thing called Congress, which blocks everything that he tries to do because not enough people from his party are in Congress where he can do what he wants to do. So yeah, it's going to get blocked. It's going to be very frustrating. Yep. But you decide you're going to blame him. It's his fault. What do you want him to do exactly? You know, kill these members of Congress and then somehow, no, that won't work. I mean, it's crazy. He goes on though. I mean, he could have codified Roe versus Wade. No, oh my God. He couldn't have done that. A president has no power to codify a law. The Democrats wanted to do that, but they didn't have enough votes because there weren't enough Democrats in Congress to pass this. Of course he wanted to codify Roe versus Wade. But Austin here is blaming Biden for Roe versus Wade disappearing and letting Trump off the hook. Yet again, why do people do this all the time? Trump does all these nasty things that we feel the effects of for many years, and it's somehow all Biden's fault. The Middle East, I'm sorry. Trump set that up with Netanyahu by excluding the Palestinians. And now we're living with that. But it's Biden's fault because he's the one that has to deal with the mess. And he's making decisions that we don't all agree with. This story goes on and on. It's too frustrating, though. Look, I get that people are critical thinkers. I respect that, because this is something the other side doesn't do. They blindly follow. And I don't think it's healthy to blindly follow. So definitely ask questions, definitely make demands. But in the end, when it comes down to it, make the right decision. Don't make no decision. Don't make a protest decision. Make the right decision or you're gambling your country away. But yes, continue making the points. Know your facts, though. Know how codifying a law works. You know the history. I'm done.
Also, you don't have to broadcast your vote. I mean, you're entitled to just vote however you want.
That's true. Yeah.
You don't have to like affiliate yourself. And I mean, of course, campaigning, whatever level of participation, that's a choice for you as well. But you can keep it to yourself. And this is some kind of like social pressure trying to one up on dissatisfaction, mm-hmm. sort of with the current political state. I mean, it just don't put it all on the incumbent. And I don't know. There's a lot of attributes to this we could get into.
Yeah, about this the story about cancel culture, right here on Long Island, actually. In fact, out east.
What kind of canceling?
Oh, the worst kind of cancel culture, because it involves Santa Claus.
Oh, really?
Yes, really. It involves Santa Claus. All right, you know what? This was in the New York Times, and I still can't believe this. In the months since the beginning of the Israel-Hamas war, you didn't think Santa played into that, but he does. Disputes over the boundaries of political expression have cost prominent people their jobs in fields like show business, publishing, and academia. Except, you know, it's not the left wing doing it this time, is it? Last week, these clashes left another famous figure suddenly out of work, Santa Claus. This very 2023 Christmas tale took place in Sag Harbor, which is a village on Long Island, where a longtime resident named Ken Dorf had been hired as a volunteer to wear the iconic red costume at an event hosted by the local Chamber of Commerce. The plan was for Santa to ride majestically atop a fire truck to the village's picturesque windmill, where... You find this funny, Kyle?
Well,
Santa rides on top of a fire engine. That's how you do it.
No.
There's no snow, so you can't do a sleigh.
No, is there really a lot of... How do you ride a fire truck majestically?
You know what? I would suggest go to Sag Harbor and watch, but apparently you can't do that.
I'll get schooled on
this. Not with this guy.
Okay.
Anyway, the spreading of joy was supposed to commence there. Now, Mr. Dorf, 70 years old, had previously played Santa at a gathering last year at the town cinema, and even had given an interview in character to a local paper. In other words, he took the Santa stuff very seriously. And I'm sorry I have the text-only version of this article, because there's a picture of him, and he looks exactly like Santa Claus. My God, it's scary. I normally have a professionally trimmed beard, but I was growing it out. He said, I look like Santa. But on December 6th, 3 days before the Jamboree, Mr. Dorf received an email from the president of the Chamber of Commerce telling him he had been relieved of his duties. How do you lay off Santa Claus? How do you do that? By Christmas, too? I mean, it's... She offered no explanation, he said, beyond saying he was too outspoken for the gig. You know, Santa has always been kind of socialistic. All that sharing. Yeah. The truth was... When word got out that he would be Santa this year, a group of people from a local synagogue, Temple Adas Israel, sent a flurry of emails to the event organizers objecting to his selection. Mr. Dorf, they said, had made people uncomfortable during a November 30th talk at the synagogue about the Israeli-Hamas crisis, sharply criticizing a pair of speakers from the American Jewish Committee, a nonprofit advocacy group that supports Jewish people and Israel, from his seat in the audience.
Wait, was he there in his official capacity?
He was, as far as I know, he was not dressed as Santa Claus, no. In fact, you know, the whole thing is when you see Santa, you're not supposed to know who's playing Santa. All right? You're not supposed to know the person's real name. Nice job, Sag Harbor. Now you reveal it to everybody. It's not how it works. Fluent in Arabic, Mr. Dorf fostered an interest in the Middle East over more than four decades, working frequently in the region as a consultant in the financial sector, Beyond his day job, he regularly gives talks as an expert on the subject, believing Arab cultures in the Middle East are gravely misunderstood. I love Israel, I love Palestine, and I do not think those are contradictory thoughts and emotions, he said in October at a local speaking engagement. He attended the talk at the synagogue, titled Answering Tough Questions on Israel, as a guest of a member. A video of the event, viewed by the New York Times, confirmed that Mr. Dorf, on multiple occasions, voiced frustration with the content of the American Jewish Committee's hour-long presentation. The atmosphere remained mostly civil, but the room at times grew tense. Well, you know, you're talking about the tensest thing going on in the planet, so that's understandable. Mr. Dorf, who emphasized that he was heartbroken by the war and desperately wanted it to end, objected during the event to the speaker's characterizations of several topics, the exact language of the Hamas charter, the relevance of the West Bank settlements to the current conflict. When called on during a question and answer session, he implied they were feeding the audience political talking points. Honestly, you two could have been propaganda for the Netanyahu government, he said. I am appalled. All right, you know what? I don't see an issue here. You invite people to a panel called Answering Tough Questions on Israel, and someone takes you up on it and has tough questions and tough statements, and you basically want to cancel him for that? Mr. Dorf said, I never said a curse word or stood up or threatened anyone, but he admits he was hot under the collar, and I regret that.
Should have been able to say a curse word.
Well,
I know that's not civil. That's not civil.
I don't know. We have different ways. Different
we don't
approaches.
Do that on the airwaves, but still, I mean.
But why can't he be Santa Claus? He's not going to be talking about the Middle East while he's, you know, riding a sleigh or a fire truck or whatever. It's just, this is not what we need. You know, we need open dialogue. It's a good thing to have these kinds of conversations, but you have to listen to the other side. Or what are you doing it for?
Well, I think there's something there with the hosting of these things, like these organizations that want to have the tough, as labeled, tough discussions, need to really be prepared, be ready to have that ferocity, because people, this is not, as you said, this is not a light topic, and to just have panelists in a forum that is about tough discussions, mm-hmm. and just feel like they are going to be the orators and everyone will just sort of seek how they can emulate their opinion.
Yeah,
no, it's going to be a tough discussion. You got to have moderation. You got to have like serious coaching a little bit, at least on how we're going to have the discussion, give some structure to that, especially it being a tough one.
Everyone, let's talk about the massacre of civilians, but please, let's remain pleasant. No, that doesn't work. I'm sorry. That doesn't work for me.
It doesn't work.
I'm going to get upset. I'm going to get hot under the collar. It's nothing personal, because I don't think anyone in the room is responsible, but you know, you want people's opinion, you're going to get people's opinion. Deal with that.
I think a big part of the response was, let's have discussions about this. And I think there's the sort of realization that it's not as easy to just, I mean, it's great to have that intention and to have,
it's admirable.
Create the context.
But know what you're getting into.
Exactly. Exactly.
Don't piss off Santa Claus, for God's sake. That's just, it's terrible. But look, we've been on all sides of this issue from the beginning, quickly condemning what Hamas did, the horrible atrocities that Hamas committed, something that a lot of people seem to have trouble doing. And, you know, I said, those people, to me, are not part of the conversation. They don't have a valid opinion, in my view. People who rip down posters of hostages, the hell are you thinking? What's wrong with you? A lot of idiots. But then, you know, you have all kinds of other stupid actions and just irresponsible ways of dealing with situations. Look, I know that it's you have a group like Hamas, who basically says that, you know, it's okay for you know, two Israeli civilians to die for every military person that they kill. And that's barbaric. Except they never said that. That's what Israel said. They said it's okay for two civilians to die for every Hamas militant that's killed. In fact, they called that tremendously positive. And you have to ask yourself, what the hell is wrong with you? That is disgusting. That is absolutely disgusting to think that way. Because these two civilians that you're killing are most likely children. Because that's the majority. And nearly 20,000 innocent civilians have been killed. Why? So that you can kill a few Hamas militants? Look, I'm not in favor of Hamas. And if Hamas could disappear tomorrow, I'd be all in favor of it. But what you're doing is turning the entire world against your goals. And that doesn't help anyone. That really doesn't help anyone. And, you know, this tragedy that happened in the past few days, which we've all heard about right now, where three of the hostages were killed by Israeli troops. Now, I'm going to say something here, all right, that I think people need to hear. We need to stop calling this a mistake, because it wasn't a mistake. They killed those three people on purpose. The only thing that they got wrong was believing they were Palestinian. Because they were waving white flags. They were calling out help in Hebrew. But because they thought, that the troops thought they were Palestinian, that didn't matter. That didn't matter at all. They shot to kill them. One of them was wounded, ran back into a building, and was basically trying to convey to them that he was a hostage, that he was Israeli. And he came out of the building, and another soldier instantly opened fire on him, killing him, another soldier. So this is not an accident. This is modus operandi. This is basically how they fight the battles. And it's targeting civilians. You can't have a more clear case than this, and a more tragic one. And that needs to be condemned. It's got nothing to do with what happened on October 7th. That needs to be condemned. Anyone who hasn't condemned it by now, I condemn them. It's absolutely horrible. But when you go around accusing anybody who criticizes things like this of being anti-Semitic, well, you have to criticize a large percentage of the Israeli population who get this, who understand that this is horrible. This is not what their country stands for. And it's becoming more and more clear that this is just Netanyahu's personal battle to stay in power and out of prison. That's what's really going on here. And, you know, if I was more of a conspiracy theorist, I would say, you know, the plan, the October 7th plan of Hamas's, was known to the Israeli government, ignored. Why? Did they really think it was that impossible? Or did they want it to happen? Did they want it to happen so that they could get everything they wanted? It's like when 9/11 happened. We all knew there were people that were rejoicing, not in, you know, obviously, but they knew they would be able to get things like the Patriot Act and all kinds of surveillance technologies that would have been objected to in the past, but you just say 9/11 and you get whatever you want. Same thing with October 7th. It's being taken advantage of by people who are corrupt, by people who don't care about civilians, Palestinian or Israeli. And we need to recognize that. That's got nothing to do with anti-Semitism. That's got to do with democracy, justice. You know, remember those things?
Yeah, I definitely think there's been a lot of opportunism in the framing of things after the conflict. But I think it was, I'm not sure that I think it was like something that anyone would have welcomed. But there have been historical things, you know, that are suspicious like that, that create those kinds of theories and stuff.
I don't think they welcomed it. I think
it's just the being so like self-assured and thinking that and there was a lot of being lulled into it. I think that was the context, is that a lot of the kind of regular action had stopped, and there was like a sense of security that there was a false sense of security around that. And then, but there's a, I mean, that also keeps being turned into a, there will be a time to talk about this, mm-hmm. you know, that never approaches. When is that time? I don't know. And that's why timelines are being discussed now. Like, hey, so we do want to get to those conversations. And part of that is we're going to have to stop using artillery to have those conversations.
And there are people who will never do that. People in power who will never do that. And, you know, like I said, I don't really believe that people were waiting for this to happen. I believe it's certainly possible. There are people like that who would say, yeah, let them commit these heinous crimes and then we'll be able to do whatever we want. There are people like that. I truly hope that is not the case here. But you have to ask yourself, you know, you knew this was in the works and you ignored it. I mean, how are you still in power? How is that even possible? Look, Trump and Netanyahu basically did not believe in the two-state solution. They pushed the Palestinians aside. They thought that was the end of it. Or at least that's what they broadcast to the rest of us.
Yeah.
This is the result. And we have to remember that, you know, instead of just pretending it's beginning right now.
Yeah, the political strain does kind of instruct you and is instructive in so far as the need to continue that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have to stop with the condemnations of people who are basically standing up for civilians. We have to stop with that. Calling people anti-Semitic because they say intifada, a word that has been used many, many times for resistance against occupation, never thought of as anti-Semitic before. And now you can't say that. From the river to the sea, you know, I looked at the map, and I admit I'm very ignorant about the history and about the importance, strategic importance of various areas, but you could make a Palestinian homeland from the river to the sea and have a pretty big Israel left over. You could do that. So it does not mean genocide, does not mean kill all the Jews. Saying that is a way of getting power. It's a way of shutting people up so that they can't have a cool chant. We were in a Palestinian restaurant in East Village a week or so ago. They have a whole section of their menu called From the River to the Sea. It's like seafood. It's a chant that is common over there. And it does not mean what they are saying it means. Maybe to some people it does. I'm sure there are many, many hateful people, but not everybody who chants that is chanting what you are saying they're chanting.
Symbols and chants get co-opted and reassigned meaning all over the place, and especially with technology and the portability of information, you have to expect that meaning takes on different forms at different times too. But the wide view of that is a larger critique about the situation and the governmental apparatus.
Do you know what happened with Alec Baldwin last night? NYPD officers escorted him away from angry demonstrators in Manhattan last night. Eventually forming a human shield around him in a doorway as shouting protesters followed.
What did he do?
Well, I don't think he really...
What did they do?
Okay, the group describes itself as a Palestinian-led community organization that has been building the movement for Palestine in New York City since 2015.
So he, like...
I'm getting to it. They've staged demonstrations Monday at transit hubs to protest Israel's retaliation for the October 7th Hamas terror attack. Demonstrations are good. I'm not sure why they're targeting Alec Baldwin. One young male angrily confronted Baldwin and said, "You work in Hollywood. Do you condemn Israel for the actions?" What are you doing? What are you doing? What's that got to do with anything? The actor replies, "You've already got your mind made up." Following inaudible dialogue and crosstalk, Baldwin is heard saying, "By the question you've got, right, I'm in Hollywood's pockets, you said." The demonstrator twice yells at Baldwin, "Is that your answer?" The actor replies, "You ask stupid questions. Ask me a smart question. I'll answer your question." Baldwin is then led away by officers from the NYPD Community Affairs Bureau. He said, as he was being led away, "I support peace in Gaza." This is exactly how you don't do it. Why are you I don't want to stand up for Alec Baldwin, but you're forcing me to. He didn't do anything here. He's an actor. I mean, you know, lots of times we're calling for people who are actors to not say anything, you know, because what do you know? And here they're saying, you must condemn, you must say this. Look, the guy says he wants peace in Gaza. Leave him alone. this is the kind of thing that makes protest movements look bad.
Well, there's to the uninitiated. A lot of misplaced energy and anger. It's going to the wrong places.
Yes.
That you can bet on 100%. Like the moment is really tense. There's a lot of anger, raw frustration, deep hurt, pain, sadness, all of those things, grief. The list goes on. And anyway.
OTW at 2600.com is our email address. We are pretty much out of time. Have these words to say, though, before we leave. Coming up after the show is our good friend Finn's final show at WUSB. Please stay tuned for the next 2 hours. You will be wowed. You will be blown away. It's a privilege. It's been an honor to be the intro to Finn's show. That's what Off the Wall has been, you know, the intro to Finn's show. I don't know what we're going to do without that. But listening to Finn over the years, it's always been kind of addictive because you never know what's going to happen. He might be talking to a bunch of poets. He might be talking to a bunch of members of a roller derby team from Brooklyn. Might be telling all kinds of stories or just doing interviews with musicians. It's what radio should be. It's what we need more of. And I'm going to miss that. I'm going to miss that so much. But I will be glued to the radio for the next 2 hours, as I hope most of our listeners will be as well. And I just want to say what an honor it has been to be the lead-up act for Finn over these years.
Yeah, thanks for all of those tracks you've played and conversations you've aired.
And just, I guess, as a final message, to quote The Clash, the future is unwritten, and we will see. We will see what the future brings. I'd like to close with actual a piece of music from Finn and his Rust Kickers, which if you are lucky enough to see at a bar in Queens somewhere, it's an experience you'll never forget. And this is a song that's near and dear to my heart called Working for the MTA. It's all about the number 6 train, of all things. We'll see you next week. Listen to Finn. Good night.
Bye, everybody.
Well, it's cold down in the tunnels today. Cold down in the tunnels today. Cold down in the tunnels today. Working for the MTA. Well, me, I run that 6-line train. Six-line train from Brooklyn Bridge to Pelham Bay. Well, I'm the son of a railroad man. I'm the son of a railroad man. I'm the son of a railroad man. Born and raised in South Louisiana. Going round, we get hard.
have to say a hearty thank you to this show that allows me to cool off after them. I'm the special cool down show after Off the Wall. They really heat it up, and they're always on a subject that is tantalizing to me and always holds my interest, I must say. And I listen to the podcast, and I listen to everything about Off the Wall, and I love it. So it is my honor to be the special cool-down act for the warm-up show. And it's a holy place to be, man, I'll tell you that. So we're about to be in our final show. It's been many years. I haven't even counted them, to tell you the truth. In many slots, but this one in the longest time slot, as in Finn's Revolution. My name is Finn Miller. You can still stay in touch with me via the web, of course, the Instagrams and the Facebooks and all that stuff. I'm not really taking any calls during the show because I could go on and on. And on. And I don't really want to do that tonight. I just want to have a nice holiday show with a couple of occasional clunkers, as I am wont to do. So let's dive right into it. This has been my theme song pretty much since I've run this show, Finn's Revolution. This is the song from the leadoff song from the BBC series The Prisoner, right here. I'm WUSB, Stony Brook.